This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 121 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Last year was a big one for NFL running backs, and specifically the 2017 running back draft class. Kareem Hunt came in and broke out, and so did Alvin Kamara. Leonard Fournette took on a huge role, and Christian McCaffrey saw a league-high 113 targets at the position. The 2017 rookies were good, and they made a big impact in the NFL. Holes were filled by that 2017 running back draft class, and that's created fewer holes that need filled by the 2018 group. The problem, though, is that this year's class is being advertised as another strong one, especially at the top with Saquon Barkley. Now, I've talked about the class based on production profiles in the past, but like last week's show on quarterbacks, I want to give you guys another perspective on this year's class. So I called up Elliot Crist, who you may know from 444.com and his awesome Draft Daily podcast. Elliot and I talk through what he looks for when evaluating running backs in today's NFL, the importance of pass protection, how he views the top end of this year's class, which running backs he sees as values, and so much more. He brings an awesome, open-minded perspective that will surely help you not only get better prepared for this month's draft, but also the fantasy football season that's ahead. So let's get to it. Now, Elliot, at this time last year, we were talking about the upcoming rookie running back class as being an incredibly strong one. Today, we're sort of saying the exact same thing. How do you compare those two classes, the 2017 class and the 2018 class, without the benefit of hindsight?
Yeah, so I actually prefer last year's class to this year's class, which is, I guess, kind of a hot take. I think last year's class came in with a lot of hype, and then the athletic testing scores really hurt and killed a lot of that hype. And this year, the best player in either class, in my opinion, is Saquon Barkley, and we'll talk about him more later. But, you know, these guys tested off the charts, whether it was Chubb or Barkley or even Royce Freeman. You know, a lot of these guys tested incredibly well, and I think that's kind of what's pushed them ahead of last year's class in the eyes of most people. But for me, you know, and we'll continue to talk about this throughout the course of the podcast, but last year's class was, there were a lot of really good pass catchers. You know, I had more first-round grades and second-round grades on players in last year's class. Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, and Leonard Fournette. Those were my top six guys. All had first- or second-round grades. I thought they could all be dynamic weapons. I think they're better pure runners in this class, but the guys that I really value, I think there are a lot more of them in last year's class.
So speaking of the things that you do value, what are those things when you're evaluating a running back prospect in today's NFL? And is there anything that you seem to value more than other evaluators at the position?
Oh, yeah. I find myself evaluating the position different than a lot of the other draft scouts. So, you know, I look at the NFL from a perspective of the fact that teams are passing 64% of the time, which means they're running 36% of the time. And now you're a data guy, and you can help me confirm my math here, but I think 64 is greater than 36.
Yes, that it is.
And on top of that, you know, passing plays are much more efficient than running plays are. You know, I was talking to someone before, and he said for a run play to get 4-plus yards, you need 7 guys to do a really good job. For a pass play to get 7-plus yards, you need like 3 guys to do an okay job.
Yeah.
So I really look at how you affect the game in the ways that matter most, and then I work my way down. So for me, receiving ability is first and foremost. And I so often hear people just say, well, can the guy catch or can he not catch? And, you know, assuming you're not Jordan Howard, you can catch, right? Like if mm-hmm. I are having a game of catch and I'm throwing you the ball 10 yards away from you, I'm assuming that you're going to be able to catch it most
of
the time.
Yeah.
And these guys are NFL players. Like, they can catch a football. But can they develop a route tree? Can they become these guys that you split out in the slot? You know, that's what Kamara and McCaffrey did so well, you know, running quick slants, you know, wheel routes, creating personnel issues for the defense. Because if you come out in a 2 wide receiver set, 2 tight ends, and all of a sudden your tight end and and running back can split out in the slot, the defense has 3 linebackers on the field, and you have mismatches all over the field for your advantage. And if you just have a guy that's going to kind of run through people on a power back, you don't really have those mismatches. So for me, route tree, receiving ability, that's what's most important to me, and that's going to affect my rankings the most. And then when it comes to pure running, I'm looking for vision. I'm looking for contact balance. Then I kind of throw in pass protection, you know, elusiveness, leg drive. Those are kind of the things that round it out for me. But in terms of what I look for most, it's receiving ability, route tree, catching the football. Then it goes to vision, contact balance, pass protection. And then last is kind of how you make guys miss. Do you kind of run through contact or do you make people miss?
I love it. I think that you just gave us a good glimpse of sort of your open-mindedness to your scouting process, Elliot, and how you've evolved that process based on how the game's evolved, which I absolutely love. But sort of along the same lines, obviously I'm coming from the perspective of being more of a data person, so I care a lot about college production for running back prospects, but how much does college production matter to you? You know, just to give you an example, you've got someone like Kalen Ballage, who may look the part and test well, but he saw less volume at Arizona State than teammate DeMario Richard, who's not a highly touted prospect. So does something like that kind of scare you off of Kalen Ballage?
I think that's a fantastic question in general, because I think it's layered, and I think that oftentimes production and film go hand in hand. Now, there's certain exceptions, and I'll talk about that in a minute. So let me start by answering the Kalen Ballage question. I think Ballage is incredibly athletic. It's one of those things where they say he kind of looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane. I mean, you take out the game against Texas Tech where he scored 8 touchdowns, and it was one of his 200-yard games the last 2 years. And then he only has 7 touchdowns that year, 6 touchdowns this year. You would think this guy that's this, 6'1", 230-pound supposed power back, he's going to show that on film. But, you know, he only averaged 2.7 yards per carry after contact over his college career, which is not very good. He never broke more than 16 tackles in a season. He goes down incredibly easily when he tests well, but when he tries to put a move on someone, he really shuffles his feet. He's not necessarily a smooth cutter. He can really slow down. I think that the reason Kalen Ballage is going to get drafted and has a chance to be successful is because of the way he can run routes and catch the football. But as kind of a power back, the production scares me. The fact that he lost his job scares me. And then the way he plays the game itself scares me. So I think oftentimes when the film's bad on a guy, the production's not great. Now, there's obviously guys that have good production and the film's not great. But an exception to that would be like Darius Geis of LSU, right? You want to understand in terms of looking to see if a guy caught passes, is that something the team's offense does? So LSU doesn't really throw very many passes to running backs, and if they do, they're kind of dump offs, flare routes. That's not really their offense. Their offense is stuck in a different century with these power toss plays and 2 tight ends and fullbacks and 1 receiver. I don't know if they're aware of what year it is and that you're allowed to score points, but they don't run their offense like that. So I'm less worried about a guy like that's production in terms of Darius Geis. Now, a guy like Ronald Jones, his production scares me. One, he never caught more than 15 passes in high school, which is scary. And then you go to a team like USC that does use their running back, and they do throw him passes, and he doesn't catch very many passes there, has no production, very limited route tree, and they have a true freshman come in on third downs for those pass routes. To me, that's when it's scary, when you don't see the production there. So I think film often adds a ton of context to production, and they kind of go hand in hand. And when I think the film really helps you kind of understand why the production happened, how it happened, and how legitimate it was.
Yeah, it's almost like confirming some of the stuff that you might see in a box score. You know, I think for the Ronald Jones thing is one that I've gone back to so many times throughout the offseason, because it's a situation where his reception share was so low. And that's not something that you often see out of successful backs at the NFL level. And that's frightening, because while you might say, oh, he profiles to be, he gets comped to Jamal Charles all the time, right? Like Ronald Jones is Jamal Charles. It's the way that folks look at him just because of his size and speed. But also Jamal Charles is a spectacular pass catcher. It was a spectacular pass catcher. And the fact that Ronald Jones didn't show that in the box score, and then you're kind of confirming that it's a frightening thing. When those two things match, to me, that's when you have a really, really big red flag.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he just gets comped to Jamal Charles because here's a small guy with dreads who wears
exactly.
Looks fast. I mean, this is getting a little off topic, but I actually read a book by the Houston Rockets general manager, and he made a rule with his scouts that you can't compare guys who look like guys, because too often these comps aren't play style, they're who they look like. And that's one of the things that happens with Ronald Jones.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So, Elliot, I know that you're a huge Saquon Barkley believer and fan, and it's clear and easy to understand why, especially as someone who values the receiving aspect from a running back. How historic do you think that Saquon Barkley is as a prospect? Is he the best running back that's come out over the last 10 or 15 years?
In terms of what I value most, yes. So, you know, this is one of the things that happens with the draft process in general, is this guy has been, no doubt about it, the number one prospect of this class for 2 years. And then people want to come up with hot takes and they want to start nitpicking things. And listen, is he a perfect prospect? No, no one's a perfect prospect. Does he bounce runs to the outside too much? Sure. But, you know, Grant Barfield did that study that showed that when he ran outside the tackles, he averaged over 9 yards per carry. So if it's going to cost him a run every once in a while, by all means, if you're going to average 9 yards a carry, go do that. And then people bring up the fact that he didn't go over 100 yards in like 7 games this year. But in those games, he had either 2 touchdowns or 100 receiving yards or over 100 all-purpose yards. So I really think that people are trying to nitpick production. If you look at the whole thing, he had a major impact on every game. And the reason I think he's like the term generational prospect feels like it's thrown out every year.
Yeah.
And we're kind of at the point in the draft process where people have done their evaluations and people are looking to try to create more and more buzz. And so I think that's why the generational thing, you hear it every year, but he's much better than Fournette. I think he's better than Zeke in terms of what you're looking for out of a running back in today's day and age. I think he's better than Gurley because Gurley was coming off the major ACL injury. He's a better prospect than Trent Richardson, CJ Spiller, Darren McFadden. You kind of work all the way back to Adrian Peterson. I didn't evaluate Adrian Peterson, but he's a very different kind of player than what Barkley is. I think what makes Barkley so special is, you know, one is the athleticism. I mean, what, 99th percentile athlete? Like, this guy can do things that most other people can't do. But he's basically Alvin Kamara at 230 pounds. And that kind of guy just doesn't really exist. And I was talking about creating matchup issues. What you can do with this guy in the football field is just incredible. I mean, he can lower shoulder and run through people. You can do the power stuff with him. Now, people talk about sometimes he avoids contact. To me, he knows when to pick and choose his spots. It's something you see Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley do, which I love as a guy who knows how banged up these running backs can get. If he can pick and choose his spots for when to lower his shoulder, I like that about a player, honestly. I don't want him to try to run through someone's face every time. But, you know, you can put him in the backfield. You can run 11 personnel, and a team's going to either have to keep a corner out there for you to split them out wide, or they're going to have a linebacker. And if you leave the corner, you just run and you're going to get the 5-6 yards of carry. And if you put the linebacker out there, then you split them out wide and the linebacker has to cover Saquon Barkley in space, and good luck doing that. So, you know, is he the best pure runner? No, of a prospect. Is he the best overall player? Yes.
Yeah. I think that he just fits so well. Just to agree with you, I think that he fits so well in today's day and age. And just to throw it out there, once draft equity is inserted into my model, I would almost guarantee that Saquon Barkley, unless he drops significantly for whatever reason, I will almost guarantee that he'll be the number one prospect in my model when it's all said and done. And that dates back to 2005. So Saquon Barkley is looking pretty nice. He's the one type of player at the running back position that I can't really fault teams for spending a fairly high pick on. I'll say that much about him.
I think you and I talked about this like a month and a half ago, because you're big on team don't draft a running back round one. They don't have that kind of value.
Yeah.
And I remember reaching out to you. I was like, but can you understand why Saquon Barkley might be the exception to that rule? And you said yes. And I agree. Like, I've come to my evaluation where if you don't contribute in the receiving game, you cannot earn a higher than third round grade for me. So I don't really give out first round grades for running backs very easily anymore, but he's a very solid first round pick because of what he brings in that receiving area of the game. And like you mentioned, you know, he's a locked in top 10 pick. He's going to go to a team and he's going to see incredible volume in both the receiving game and the running game. I mean, I'll get to this a little bit later, but you know, it's very hard outside of injury for him not to be a very serious fantasy contributor.
Yeah, and speaking of that, who is your number two fantasy, or who is your number two running back in this class? And do you think that there is any chance, like, let's say that Darius Geis falls to the late first round. He goes to a team that's naturally going to be better just because later first round teams are better situated because they finish better the previous season. Is there any chance, do you think, that someone like Darius Geist or whoever your number two back is could outperform Saquon Barkley in fantasy football this season and just moving forward throughout their career because of that landing spot?
So Darius Geist is my RB2, and you know, I do have a couple concerns with this game, but I also do think that the receiving production, while it might not be there, he does profile as a guy who has the traits, who had the skills in high school. You know, he did play some wide receiver. When he did get pass catching opportunities, he made the most of them. So I do think he can be that three down workhorse back. Now, it's really going to depend for his fantasy value in terms of his landing spot. I think Barkley's the one guy that it doesn't really matter. Now, I think it's best if he avoids the Browns and doesn't have to play on the same team as Duke Johnson and Carlos Hyde. But if they draft, Saquon Barkley, they might as well cut Carlos Hyde. He should never see the football field. And there's also an assumption of rational coaching that they'll keep Barkley and Duke Johnson on the field. And, you know, with Hugh, that's a big assumption right there. So I know we talked about this, and I was looking at different teams late in the first round, and I suppose if he went to the Pittsburgh Steelers and Le'Veon Bell left after this year, it could be a situation like that. But outside of that, a lot of those teams that he's been talked about going to, you know, I've heard as high as 13 to the Redskins. Chris Thompson's probably going to have that receiving role. The Detroit Lions, Theo Riddick's probably going to have that role. The New England Patriots, possibly. He's probably not going to be one of their main pass-catching backs there. And then you look at kind of the end of that first round, and I'm not sure that there's a team where he's going to be locked into the role that Barkley was. And, you know, I researched this a little bit to try to go back to 2005 to look at top 10 picks in the NFL draft and the volume they get rookie year. And when you're a top 10 pick, man, they get you involved heavily. Fournette averaged 24.3 targets and touches per game. Zeke was over 24. Gurley was just below 20. But keep in mind, that's including the first couple games where, you know, they were easing him in. Richardson was getting 22.5. I mean, McCaffrey only got 14, but he only started 10 games, and he had 113 targets. C.J. Spiller only made one start. Darren McFadden was heavily involved. Adrian Peterson, obviously, heavily involved. And at that point, you're starting to get out of what today's NFL is. So it's going to be really hard for one of these other backs to pass what Barkley can contribute to a team fantasy-wise in year one.
So, Elliot, you and I have talked about Rashad Penny before. We had a pretty long discussion about him one day, I remember. And I know that you're worried about his overall pass-blocking ability. So how do you think pass protection limits the potential in a running back at the next level and as he transitions to the NFL?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Because in terms of fantasy, we don't necessarily care how good of a pass blocker he is because we don't get any fantasy points for that. NFL coaches care, right? Which means that you need to care because it's going to impact his ability to get on a football field. Peyton Manning used to always talk about rookie running backs, like, if you can't protect me, you can't play.
Damn it, Donald!
Yeah, and with Penny, he has so many terrible reps. I mean, just terrible reps where he completely misses guys. There's one where he's got two guys coming up against him, and he kind of almost turns his body sideways to go in between the two of them just to make sure he doesn't get hit. Like, it's scary. And then you add in the fact that he's not necessarily a good receiver. He's very adequate. I mean, he was highly involved in San Diego State's offense and still never caught more than 20 passes in a season. So that I have those concerns with Penny. I think that he's a big, powerful back with home run speed, great contact balance, really good vision, really good understanding of defensive leverage. But I question if he's more than a two-down back. And, you know, Ben Baldwin pulled something from PFF where he kind of talked about the different importance in terms of your different skill sets and how they affect running back and how they affect NFL teams, how correlated they are with wins. Sorry to stumble there. But PFF pass blocking grade, pass blocking efficiency, yards per route run, and receiving grade were the four most important things in terms of how they correlated with wins. And those are things that I don't necessarily see in Penny. So I have those concerns because if you're a nightmare as a pass blocker, I don't know how much a team's going to trust you to try to really work on you and some of your receiving flaws as is.
So do you think, though, just to kind of get philosophical here, because I think that this is a really, really interesting topic, do you think that coaches are overstating and overselling the importance of pass blocking, especially considering that a lot of running backs out that go out there on third down aren't even pass blocking. You know, they're going out and trying to catch passes. But do you think, you know, I think a really good example is Kareem Hunt and the way that folks viewed, or Andy Reid seemed to view Kareem Hunt last year, didn't see the field as much on third down as he probably should have or could have. And in the end, you're not getting that dynamic player on the field in those big spots, in those big third down spots. So I guess my question is, do you think that coaches are overselling the importance of pass protection? Because I agree that the biggest thing with pass pro is the way that coaches view them, because if coaches view it as a huge deal, then these players aren't going to be on the field. But do you think that that's overstated by coaches?
I think it depends on the player, if that's a fair way to put it. So with Kareem, his tape was real bad too. I mean, he consistently would drop his head and just extend his arms and hope for the best, which is not a winning strategy. And you saw some of those deficiencies with the Kansas City Chiefs as well. But he was also a really good receiver in college. Like a guy, for example, like Chris Thompson is not a good pass blocker, but that's not necessarily what you're putting him on the field to do. He can give away tendencies because it doesn't matter. You're not going to be able to cover him. So guys that aren't necessarily dynamic receivers, I think it matters for them more, especially early on, because coaches want to be able to trust them to stay on the football field. If you're not going to be incredibly dynamic as a receiver, for me to put you on the field, you better be able to pass block. I mean, Jordan Howard does that, right? He's a pretty good pass. And that's why he gets on the field at all on third down. Do they overrate it some? Probably. But as long as it continues to play a part in their evaluation and how many snaps they're going to give someone on third down, it's going to impact how many receiving opportunities they get, which, you know, is going to impact their PPR upside for me in terms of fantasy.
Yeah, I love that answer. I couldn't agree more. So at the top of a lot of running back rankings, you'll see the two Georgia backs in Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. Do you have a clear favorite between the two of them?
So I think they're both really good players. And I told you earlier that the highest grade I'll give a guy who I don't trust catching passes is an early three. And that's where I have Nick Chubb. I like Sonny Michel more because of my grading system. I'm not necessarily sure he's a better he's not a better pure runner. But Michel, you know, he didn't catch very many passes this past year. But the 2 years prior, he caught 26 and 22 passes. He profiles as a guy that can do that. You saw them when they did give him opportunities out of the backfield. He looked very comfortable. He's also probably the best pass protector in the entire class. So to bring that point back from before, teams are going to really trust him on third down and be able to use that receiving ability. And then his between the tackle ability and just pure running ability is also really good. He's got fantastic vision, really good anticipation. I mean, Georgia had a fantastic offensive line, and he seemed to be in sync with them consistently. He's got really good acceleration, which leads to him hitting home runs. He doesn't necessarily have the home run speed, but he's got enough speed that guys aren't going to catch him from behind. And he's got good contact balance once he gets more than a yard or two down the field. Sometimes because he's a smaller guy, if he doesn't get that acceleration, he can go down a little bit easy on first contact. Now, Nick Chubb might even be in that Saquon Barkley conversation if it was never for that knee injury, which slowed him down some. I mean, he tested off the charts, right, with the 4.52 40-yard dash, 39-inch vertical jump, 128-inch broad jump, the bench press 29 times too. I mean, a bunch of 90 percentile scores. And I think his vision is amazing. His balance is amazing. He's got great patience, vision, elusiveness. He can run through people. He's got home run speed. I don't necessarily know if he gets to his top speed as quickly as I would like. And, you know, I was talking to Charles McDonald, who's followed Nick Chubb, and he's been a Georgia fan for 4 years. And he said the one thing he never recovered quite was his lateral agility. And, you know, that's huge in the route running aspect. And Georgia gave Nick Chubb very, very few snaps in pass protection and receiving. I think he had, what, 6 catches this past year, less than 60 reps in pass protection. So that's a huge question mark for me. He didn't necessarily look the most comfortable catching the football. Now, that's just a couple of drills and the combine. I have some questions for how much he can contribute in the passing game. So I have Sony Michel ahead of Nick Chubb. And I know that's kind of a hot take in Dynasty. I think Chubb is kind of the unquestioned 103 pick. Now, landing spot is going to play a huge role into all of this. I think Chubb is as good of a between-the-tackles runner as there is in the draft class, but there are questions about the other aspects of his game that I think are very legitimate.
Really interesting, because the production profile stuff that I work on said the same thing with preferring Sony Michel over Nick Chubb. So it's really cool to see that those two things connect. But let's look at some backs who aren't getting as much hype as some of the ones that we've just talked about. You and I are both John Kelly guys. I know that. I would love to hear your perspective on what you've seen and what you like from John Kelly and the kind of role that you think that he can play at the NFL level, and maybe just throw in a comp for John Kelly.
Oh, man, you're asking me to talk John Kelly that we may go for 3 hours. Listen, you throw on John Kelly's film, and it's really hard not to fall in love immediately. I mean, you talk about contact balance. His balance is as good as there is in the class. He's got pretty good vision, power. He doesn't have long speed at all. He's got decent acceleration, fantastic route runner, really good catching the football, solid in pass protection. He's a junkyard dog, and I mean that in kind of like the most compliment and the biggest compliment I can give a guy. You know what I mean? He's a tone-setting running back. And when you looked at him his first few games of the year, whether it was against Florida, Georgia Tech, Georgia, UMass, I want to say, he was busting out 100-plus yard games every game of the year. He got caught smoking weed, suspended a game. Personally, I don't really care that he smoked weed. It's going to factor into someone's evaluation. But if I started knocking all these guys for smoking weed, we'd have like 4 guys left in the end.
Right.
And the team quit on Butch Jones after the Alabama game. So I think that really impacted his numbers when you watch it. The offensive line stops blocking. Like he's tackled on, 26% of his runs behind the line of scrimmage. There's really nowhere for him to go. And I think it really killed his hype. And then you add in the fact that his combine's not great. It was pretty mediocre if we're being fair. Showed the speed, the 3-cone. Now, the reason I'm less concerned is often with athletic testing, I'm looking at to how it compares to their film. So I'm not going to double count something. So I wrote down that John Kelly's not a very good athlete. He's not even necessarily the most elusive. What he does is he makes you miss your target point and uses his contact balance to really to just run through your tackle, and then he picks up the yards after contact. I think through the first 5 weeks of the year, he broke more tackles per attempt than any other player in the country. So he's incredible at that. And the reason I love him is because of his receiving ability. I think his market share might have been even higher than Saquon.
Yeah, yeah, his reception share was higher than Saquon Barkley's last season, which is crazy.
He breaks linebackers down in space. He gets open, he catches the football, he can turn upfield, and he can really do a lot of things. And now this is a super lazy comp, but he reminds me a little bit of Alvin Kamara meets Kareem Hunt. The reason I say it's a lazy comp is because Kareem Hunt's athletic testing is very similar to John Kelly's, and he went to the same school as Alvin Kamara. So that's why. But their games remind me in terms of I think he would thrive in an Alvin Kamara role where he's like one of two backs that you use a lot in the pass game. You use him to get mismatches, and in the open field, he can really break people down and run through their tackles and create a lot of big plays that way. And, you know, Kareem Hunt might have had the best contact balance in the class last year, and I think that's Kelly this year. I really think that he's probably going to go in the fourth round. I have a second round grade on him. He's my fourth overall running back, which I know everyone thinks is crazy. I'm crazy for doing that. He's not my fourth overall fantasy running back because, you know, like we talked about with Barkley before, where these guys go and the volume they're locked into has a huge impact on their fantasy value. But I think John Kelly can be one of the steals of this class and, you know, a legitimate stud in the NFL.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, man. Who do you think, though? You know, we've been talking about pass catching backs. That seems to be the theme throughout this entire podcast. But who do you think the most dynamic pass catcher of the entire group is? Or I guess I should say someone who can play a strong satellite back role like Chris Thompson in the NFL. So, you know, we're not necessarily talking about Saquon Barkley here. Maybe you want to dig a little bit deeper and throw a guy out there that we haven't talked about. But overall, who do you think could be really dynamic as a pass catcher?
Yeah, so I mean, I talked about Kelly and Barkley and Michelle because I think all three of those guys can be. So I don't want to leave them off this list.
Yeah.
But on top of them, Nyheim Hines. You know, he played wide receiver originally. This year was his first year as the starting running back. He split time with Jalen Samuels after Matthew Days went off to college. A track guy, you can do a whole lot of things with him. He plays much bigger than he is. He loves to throw his body around. He can really run routes. You know, former slot receiver. So I've heard him. Eric Galco talked about he's basically Giovanni Bernard 2.0, and would not be surprised if he goes in a similar range as Bernard, who went 37th overall. So I think Hines deserves a lot of that hype. I think he's a really good receiver. I think Kalen Ballage, I was low on him earlier, but I talked about the fact that his receiving ability is what makes him special. And he's so different than any other satellite back, right? These guys are normally small guys. And I've heard talk of even possibly moving him to become a big slot receiver. And I think he could excel in that area too. Mark Walton. Now, Mark Walton's testing numbers weren't very good. He came back with a better pro day. Really good in pass protection. Can break people down. Was hurt this past year with the ankle injury. Pretty good vision. But, you know, good route runner. Can catch the football. Had a lot more production in 2016 than 2017. Chase Edmonds with a great three-cone time. A D2 guy. He could be a real pass catcher guy. And then, yeah, I mean, those are kind of the guys that I think fit that role. I think there are a lot more of the quote-unquote two-down guys than there are the third-down satellite backs in this draft.
Very interesting. So just to end the show, I really want to see if there are any running backs or value guys that we haven't talked about or that you want to talk about that you're higher on than most. I think a lot of the listeners would want to hear that. So who are a couple guys that you seem to like more than others?
Jalen Samuels is someone I love, maybe more for an NFL standpoint than a fantasy standpoint, because, I mean, you're talking about a guy that played tight end, slot receiver, H-back, running back, led the country, I think, the last 2 years in plays of 20 yards or more, can really catch the football, can run routes, has power, vision. They used him as the wildcat quarterback. They even threw passes. He can do everything, probably going to go in the fourth round and just be a really fun player. Now, there's talk right now he has running back eligibility. There's talk he may end up with tight end eligibility, and then he could be a fantasy gold mine. Royce Freeman, I think, is such an interesting study because I don't necessarily know if he does anything fantastic other than his vision. His vision is really good. Now, if you haven't watched Royce Freeman, go watch Royce Freeman just for what Oregon did this year with their run blocking in terms of the zone schemes, the counters, the traps. They have so – it's really fun to watch the offensive line play, and that's coming from a guy that doesn't like offensive line play necessarily. But Freeman took advantage of all of that with his vision. He sets guys up at the next level. But, you know, I didn't think he played to his testing numbers. He lost weight for the combine. He can run through contact, but not necessarily as well as you would think for someone that's 240 pounds. And he's been talked about anywhere between the second and fifth round. If he goes in the second round, his fantasy stock's going to blow through the roof. If he goes later, I think he's the kind of guy that might not necessarily have a role day one. But if he becomes – he can step in and do a lot of things because of that vision and just be a reliable player that sticks around for a really long time. And then Kerryon Johnson is the other guy. And, you know, Daniel Jeremiah said that he's got like a first-round grade on him and thinks he could go top 50. So, again – That could be huge for him. Johnson's a really interesting study. My comparison for him doesn't even play football. I compare him to Draymond Green. He's good at a whole lot of things, but not great at anything. And he could become a three-down back. And, you know, he might not necessarily ever be a top 12 NFL running back, top 15 guy, but he can handle 20 touches a game. He can catch some passes. He can block. He's got really good vision and patience. He gets that Le'Veon Bell comp because of his patience. He's not – I don't think he's in the same level as Le'Veon Bell, but he also – he wins in so many different ways. He's got contact balance. He can – run through defenders. He can make a miss. He loves to play chess with guys too. Like if he beats you one time with running through you, the next play you can see the defender ready to kind of take on that big hit, and then the defender's hesitating, and so he hits him up with a move and kind of uses his lateral agility and makes a miss. So those are a couple guys that I think are really interesting, and depending on where they go, could be really interesting fantasy assets.
Elliot, thanks so much for joining the show today, man. Your outlook on things really is so valuable. If you guys aren't following Elliot on Twitter, go ahead and fix that problem by following at Elliot Crist, and make sure to check out his Draft Daily podcast. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round podcast, you can do so by going to Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. I'll be back in your ears later this week for the weekly mailbag episode. If you've got any questions for it, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at LateRoundQB or email me at JJ@numberfire.com. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you then.